This whole notion, this issue here with the Sabbath, as Jesus encounters some people who have made the Sabbath very burdensome, we know that the Sabbath law does not force upon us the legal demand to worship on the last day of the week. Okay. The early church made somewhat of a switch to the first day, and that's apparent in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. That's when they began to meet. But I want to move just a little bit past the usual discussions we have about that to how we sometimes, you know, we have to justify ourselves why we don't meet on Saturdays and why we don't believe in the Sabbath. Those are important discussions to have. But I want to move beyond that just a little bit today and think about the deeper significance of the day. And I think there's something that for the church today, we can still find some meaning in what Jesus was doing and how he understood what the Sabbath was supposed to be. I believe, even under the law, the Sabbath was meant to be a little bit more than just keeping a lot of regulations about not working. Now, that clearly was one of the things that was a problem. They were told not to do that. And the teachers of the law, they obviously had justification for that. It was the fourth commandment. Okay, keep the Sabbath holy, and we weren't sitting there. Nobody was supposed to work on those days. But again, I believe Jesus digs a little deeper, and he reminds, I think, these leaders of something that they kind of knew, but somehow had gotten lost in all the over regulations of what the Sabbath had become. And how they had viewed it, and how you know, they had tried to keep people from breaking that particular law, and that's what I want to try to dig into just a little bit today, because I think there's a way of our understanding why we come together, what it is we're trying to do that kind of draws on that deeper significance. So I want to think first of all about the Sabbath and a commemoration of God's activities. Okay, it is a commemoration of God's activities. The Sabbath goes all the way back to the book of Genesis, to the creation account. I'd like you to turn to that for a moment, and let's read Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all of the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. It became, I believe, or should have become, a day for commemorating and remembering God's creative activity. I don't know, I always ask the question here, did God really need to rest? You know, said God rested on the seventh day. Does it mean God was tired? Does it mean God needed to take a nap? You know, we know from a lot of other places in the Old Testament that God is described as a God who doesn't sleep. God doesn't slumber. God's always available. Okay, he doesn't abide by, nor is he affected by, the rules of time that we are. He doesn't have to do that kind of thing. And so I believe when Moses, really writing this, is saying that God rested, he's probably just saying something like God stopped and spent a little time, I don't know if I want to say doing something else. Maybe that's more a message for us, this whole idea of resting, something that we needed to do in order to stop and be mindful of God, okay? Because it's very easy to just sort of let all the days run together, keep moving, keep doing things, keep carrying on business, okay? But we needed a day to stop, and the day specifically to stop and think about God, okay? So I believe that's inherent in the original message that we're told here about God resting. It was a time to stop and for us to think about him. In Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 15, we read essentially the command, and this is one of the two times that the Ten Commandments are actually listed in the Bible. The first one is Exodus chapter 20, but here in Deuteronomy chapter 5, I want you to hear how Moses kind of expands on this idea of the Sabbath and what it meant. He says, first, beginning in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant, or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock, or the sojourner who was within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." Did you catch the idea about commemoration there again? That it has a lot to do with, has everything to do with the fact that the Sabbath not only was a thought about God's creation, but it was also a remembrance of God's redemption. It was a day to stop and think about that. It was a day to kind of get rid of all the other noise in your life and to stop and think. And I think that probably has a lot to do with why don't work. Don't get caught in doing all those things that might keep you from thinking about that. Okay? It was a day for Israel to remember and celebrate her freedom. And to overburden people with regulations to prevent work, I'm not so sure that was the intent of the law here. And I think that becomes clear when we see what Jesus does with the Sabbath, how he, in the minds of the leadership of Israel, seems to break the Sabbath all the time. What he really does is he breaks their regulations surrounding the Sabbath. Okay, and he does so, I believe, because he's trying to get them to think about what's the real point here? What is the purpose of this? What are we trying to do? Is it just that we're keeping a list of all the things we're supposed to do and stay within those parameters? As long as we stay within those parameters, we're good people. Well, that's kind of what they did with work. Okay, couldn't walk a certain distance and quite a few other things that they weren't supposed to do. But avoiding work and chores was a way of keeping them from being distracted. Okay, it was meant to help them focus on what God had done. Somewhere along the line, though, Israel transformed the Sabbath into a burden. Something that was overly burdened, overly regulated. And it was a concern for not breaking the Sabbath. So, I don't know, I don't know that I want to say I'm sympathetic with the Pharisees, but I kind of understand a little bit of where they were coming from here, okay? So, we move into an area now where I think Jesus seeking to reestablish the real meaning of what the Sabbath was. And that's where we come back to our passage in Luke chapter. Actually, we're going to move to a couple of different places first, because I want to say something about where the leaders were right, okay? You know, not all of the synagogue rulers in the book of Luke were bad guys. We tend to paint everything with broad strokes and, you know, scribes and Pharisees, all bad. Everybody else, all good. You know, that's, anybody who knows people knows that's a little bit too broad of a stroke to paint, because most people are somewhat of a mixture of those. But there were some ways that I think the leaders of God's people were correct. Probably the foremost one, maybe is the thing that drove them more than anything, was in the book of Exodus, when a person violated the Sabbath by going out and gathering sticks. It was the one and only time that we know of for sure that a person, that capital punishment was used in Israel. There were other things that were, you could invoke capital punishment for, but we don't know that they were actually used. In fact, they tended to put a lot of hedges around those as well, because that was one thing. You know, you want to be careful. You don't want to just, you know, overuse capital punishment. And so they had all kinds of ways of, you know, sort of being careful. But this is the one time that it happens. There's another time when the person violates Jericho. That was another time. But this was over the Sabbath. Seemed like a pretty minor offense to us, okay? And the prophets often express God's weariness of their sacrifices in holy days, okay? okay? In Isaiah chapter 1 and verses 10 through 17, I'm just going to read a couple of portions of it. Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the teaching of our God, you people of Gomorrah. And by the way, Sodom and Gomorrah were gone by then. He's using this as a metaphor for the people of Israel. What to me is the multitude of your sacrifices, says the Lord? I've had enough of burnt offerings of rams and of the fat of well-fed beasts. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or of lambs or of goats. When you come to appear before me, who has required of you this trampling of my courts? And he will go on to criticize them for not caring about the more important matters of the law. It says, wash yourselves, verse 16, make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of your deeds from before my eyes. Cease to do evil and learn to do good. Seek justice, correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless, plead the widow's cause. And any number of other things, the prophets are saying, look, you guys are getting all these details about worship, but you're missing the really important part of it. And he says, you know, the worship is only meant to bring you to those other things. It's meant to, I think, remind you of all those other things. In Isaiah chapter 58, verses 13 and 14, we're going to come back to that particular passage a little bit later, but he says kind of essentially the same thing. He says, you're not really delighting in what the Sabbath is. And that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a delight, not a burden. Another passage is in the book of Amos, chapter 8. And this may be a little more well-known passage to you, but Amos chapter 8, verses 4 through 6, listen to what Amos says here. Kind of the same message from Amos as it was from Isaiah. Hear this, you who trample the needy and bring the poor of the land to an end, saying, when will the new moon be over that we may sell grain? And the Sabbath that we may offer wheat for sale, that we may make the ephah small and the shekel great, and deal deceitfully with false balances, that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals and sell the chaff of the wheat. Now, do you kind of grasp what's going on here? First of all, they're kind of anxious for the Sabbath and other holy days to end so they can start business practices all over again. And now add to that, to the fact that their business practices were cheating. That's what the false balances are. That's what selling the chaff with the wheat was all about. They're giving people something that they're not paying for. And they're gaining off of cheating people. So here in Amos' day, you have people who are celebrating, and I'm using that in quotes, they're celebrating the Sabbath, but they're not really celebrating their Sabbath. They're kind of anxious to get it over with, so they can go back doing whatever they were doing. Not good things, were the things they were doing. So, on the one hand, you have the leadership understood that the Sabbath was important, and they were trying to enforce that particular rule because it was important. It was a part of their law. And you have people in the pew, so to speak, were sort of abiding by it, but they really didn't want to. Their hearts weren't in it. They were doing the sacrificing. They were coming to the Sabbath day, but they really weren't into it, so to speak. It was a formality. And perhaps, you know, that's the problem that the Pharisees are having there. They're dealing with kind of both sides of this issue in trying to get the people to do the right thing. I very little doubt the synagogue rulers knew about these abuses and about the prophetic statements about them. And as I mentioned, however, not all the synagogue rulers were bad. They were under a certain understanding. Here's what we need to do. So, I don't want us to go away from ourselves. Bob's totally sympathetic with the synagogue rulers. I kind of just understand a little bit of why they did what they did, okay? Because the Sabbath was an important thing. But here's where I believe they went wrong. They're fastidious about not working, first of all, led to a very much an over-regulation. We see the leadership criticizing Jesus' disciples for plucking grain on the Sabbath and eating. I'm eating. I need to eat. Okay. They would regulate how far you could walk. That's why the New Testament writers talk about a Sabbath day's journey. If you walked one step beyond what was a Sabbath day's journey, supposedly you violated the Sabbath. And in the case we have in front of us here, if you'll turn back to Luke chapter 13, you will see that we have a problem of being healed on the Sabbath. And I have to admit, I'm having a little trouble getting the Pharisees' reasoning here. Okay, what was so bad about being healed on the Sabbath? Okay, I don't know. Jesus heals the woman and says, look, this is a woman that's was bound by Satan for 18 years. Why shouldn't she be healed on the Sabbath? And you can look at that argument and basically say, it just makes perfect sense. You know, it seems to us at least to make perfect sense. Why isn't healing one of those things that's important for God's activity? And this is one of the reasons Jesus keeps getting in trouble with the leadership, because he's violating these rules and he's, I think, bringing out what is meant to be the real meaning behind what the Sabbath was for. Loosening her bonds was a perfectly good idea considering the nature of the Sabbath. Go back to their commemoration of God's redemption. And it's interesting that Jesus uses the terminology here of loosing her bonds. And then he quotes the law and he says, guys, you basically do the same thing. So Jesus reasons with them on case, basically what we might consider in legal terms, case law here. Okay? He goes back and he says, look, don't you guys take your ox or your donkey, untie them. Look at the connection here he uses between loosing her bonds and untying the ox. It's kind of an interesting little way of drawing the connection and making it clear for them. Don't you untie or unbound your ox and take them out and water them on the Sabbath? And you know you're not breaking the law by doing that. You're taking care of your ox. You're taking care of your animals. But enforcing all these legal burdens had become such a burden to them, and they could not see that healing was one of those ways of, you know, not violating the Sabbath. I don't know why they couldn't see it. Maybe it's because I wasn't living back then and didn't, you know, come under this law. Although I grew up in a time when Sunday was a day you just spent time resting, being with family, going to church. Okay, that seems to me, even though we don't sort of put a lot of these regulations around the idea of a Sunday as our Sabbath, but it still seems to me there's something powerful about what this day is supposed to be and what our time together here is supposed to be. And that's kind of where I want us to move to in our thinking here. Okay. Notice the people in this particular occasion. They rejoiced at what Jesus did. My guess is they're going, yeah, these regulations, they're just driving us crazy. You know, they're such an overburden. We feel guilty all the time. We can't do anything without feeling guilty about, you know, how we're going about our lives. Jesus, I believe, is bringing out the idea of what Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 13. And I'd like to read just a portion of some of that here. Isaiah 58 verses 13 and 14. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, think about what Amos said. Amos said it with a little bit more detail about they were just kind of, we want to get through with this so we can go back to all the cheating, lying, stealing we were doing. Okay. Then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth, etc., etc., etc. The idea of delighting in what that day represented, I believe, is what Jesus is trying to get them back to see. Why isn't it legitimate for a woman to be healed in the synagogue on the Sabbath day and it not be considered work? That just, you know, I guess we look back on it and say, well, that just seems perfectly natural. It didn't to them. Why does this bother the ruler so much? It's just a question that I asked. Why not rather rejoice that a woman he knew could now walk upright? This woman was bound for 18 years. My suspicion is everybody knew who she was. Okay? When you look around the room here, everybody knows everybody. Maybe you don't know everybody as well as you know certain ones, but you know who they are. Okay, here's a woman that's she's walked in like this for 18 years. And suddenly she can stand upright, and everybody goes, whoa, that's pretty good. We're really glad for her. The synagogue ruler doesn't do that, and it's perplexing. To me, it's very perplexing. This indeed was a way to honor God's day of creation, God's day of redemption. And, you know, again, we don't necessarily describe our Sundays as a Sabbath. We don't get into the whole regulation of what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. I'm pretty sure we shouldn't do that, okay? But I'd like us to see it, and here's where we kind of get to, what is it we're doing here? Are we coming just because this is a duty we are here to perform? I would have to say kind of yes and no. God calls us to come together, doesn't he? He calls us to be a worshiping community. He calls us to commune with him. We commune with the God who both created us and redeemed us. And we should see this time not as simply fulfilling our obligations or coming to make everybody see that we're fulfilling our obligations. We should see this as a time when we provide our souls with the healing waters of the Spirit and the teachings that are essential to make our lives work and to make our lives better. That's why we're here. And we need to be able to see when we call for repentance, for example, that that's just a matter of, guys, changing into doing God's ways is going to bring refreshing to your life. It's going to make your life work a little better. I know it's hard. And you go through things when maybe there are things you can't change. Okay? And you need the support of the community for that. We need to be able to see ourselves as supporting one another. I think we do, but it maybe just needs to be said from time to time that we need to keep like a laser focus. We're supporting one another here, okay? And I want you to think about what our elders' prayer is all about. And I don't know, maybe I just feel like it's time to kind of go back to that just to remind us. Our elders' prayer is for you to tell us what your needs are. You don't even have to give us your name on those things. If you read the back of the prayer card, it doesn't require that you put your name on it. You don't want your name mentioned. And it isn't required that you come specifically and give that prayer and have us pray about it today. But it's a way of us trying to find out what your needs are. Okay? And perhaps give you the healing that you need, give you the strength and encouragement that we want you to have as a result of being here, communing with God and with us. So let's make sure we all understand that we want everybody to get the spiritual help and strength that they need. Some of us come in here, we're struggling. Some of us come in here, you know, we're doing okay each week. And it's kind of okay to come either way. We want you here, okay? We want you here because this is the place where you are built up and fed, not torn down. It should be a place where you don't necessarily have to have on your best face all the time, okay, or present the most perfect image. We've been talking on Sunday morning in class about Galatians. You don't have to have the perfect image. You just have to have faith in Jesus Christ, okay, and the grace that comes along with that. And so we come here to fill our souls with grace and mercy, okay? And I'm not even sure how I want to end today's lesson other than to say, let's just keep that in mind, okay? Let's make sure we know that we're trying to support one another. And that's what being at worship is all about, communing with God, filling our souls with the things we need to carry on our lives and deal with the struggles and good things we have in our lives. So let's just kind of keep that in the forefront of us all the time. And we'll have an elder's prayer when it's time after we have our song. Thank you.